So I'm Rudolf Behrendt. I work in Paris at the ONERA, so it's the French aerospace lab. So now I want to thank Helga Zepp-Larouche very much for having invited me to this Schiller Institute International Conference. So I came here to talk about space exploration, but above all, I would like to remind you of something quite obvious, quite common, which seems to be forgotten today, even though it determines the future we can imagine for our societies. We live in an infinite world. It seems like it doesn't have real consequences. But let's imagine the opposite. Then we have to admit right away that the resources available are also finite. Then that there is a territory to be shared. Then population growth becomes a problem because that resources are diminished. If this is the case, then we consider the future only with a growing feeling of fear. Progressing in technology makes life easier. But by improving the well-being of the population, it also leads people to live longer and to be more numerous. Then we become suspicious about progress and of people's welfare, and prefer to allow the existence of poverty and thus war and famine in order to reduce human population. As if humans were animals which are not endowed by reason. We then end up rejoicing about those terrible things, having become convinced that they are indispensable to the well-being of the AP few, who have the right to dignified life. Such a logic of that very pragmatic, finite world. That is such the logic of this finite world. And we end up hating man and seeing in him nothing but smallness and egoism. So this is a very sad story I wanted to start with, but the real life is much better than that. It's a very ridiculous hypothesis that finite world. We only need to look above to the heavens to be convinced of the contrary. And if we do so, I can promise you an era of great optimism and love for life. And this era will certainly beat any scenario of managing a world of finite resources. So we have difficulties believing it today, but that optimism already existed. And by the way, we owe a lot to two great German scientists, which are certainly not unknown to you. More than 40 years ago, humanity proved that it was capable of accessing other worlds. More than 40 years ago, man worked on the moon. And at that time, I guess 20 years before they did that, they wouldn't imagine that it would be possible. It was absolutely an utopia for them. So we owe that to Wernher von Braun, who convinced Kennedy to launch the Apollo program, with the perspective of setting a foot on the moon in only 10 years. That's something extremely ambitious. And then came Kraft-Ericke. We already heard about it yesterday, about him. Kraft-Ericke made significant progress in the use of liquid propulsion for propulsion of rockets. And he proposed a very original concept to separate the transport of cargo and from transport of men, leading to an improved efficiency for both types of very different missions. And maybe the most important, Kraft-Ericke developed a philosophy of space exploration for the greatest good of mankind, where it demonstrated the unconditional duty we have to extend human life precisely to avoid this terrible story I have told you at the beginning, that we need to believe in this infinite world. So it's a pleasure to overcome the challenges to reach these other worlds. We shouldn't lack optimism. It gives a sense to our existence to overcome this space between us, between the Earth and other worlds. That's what our power of reason is made for. And it is using it that really makes us humans. So at the moment when humanity met the challenge of extracting itself from the Earth to reach another celestial body, the Moon, what a wave of optimism moved all the minds. So I was not there when everybody could see on the TV that man was walking the Moon, but still I know this optimism. So some people here can witness that. But I wish that the young generation demands also its own share of infinity which surrounds us. The young people have to claim that, what some of you could have witnessed. And it was the long-term plan of von Braun and Kraft-Ericke. They didn't intend only to set a foot on the Moon. They had a real plan for 50 years. And at their time, they believed that in the 1990s, man would have already established a permanent base on the Moon. So today, in 2012, they may have believed that we would be on Mars already. So I want you to feel all the time we have lost. More than 50 years ago, we have been able to go to the Moon. We even didn't have all the powerful computers we have today. They made a lot of calculations by hand at that time. So it's not something, it's not far future what I'm talking about, to explore the universe. We have already started it 40 years ago and we stopped. And I want to talk to you about the plan they have, that the plans we didn't fulfill, but we have to do it now. So the plan to set a permanent base on the Moon. But what for? Why do we need this base? So there are many things to do on the Moon. So first of all, the Moon is a heavenly body which harbors enormous resources for our usage on Earth. We never forget that we do that for people on Earth too. The Moon contains enormous quantities of titan, aluminium, and iron. And beyond that, however, the Moon has a decisive advantage relative to the Earth in the extraction of those metals. So the Moon has no atmosphere. And when we want to collect the metals, we need to purify them to extract the dioxygen from those metals to get the best mechanical and anti-corrosive qualities possible. So when the metal is in fusion, we create a void on the Earth, a very strong void, to get rid of this dioxygen. So this is very expensive, this process on the Earth. But on the Moon, we don't have any atmosphere. And we have for free a void there, much more powerful than all what you have already done, much powerful than what we're able to do on the Earth with our technologies. So for free, we have a way to have much purified materials. And with the titan, we could a purified lunar titan we would have produced on the moon that we would bring back to the Earth, we'd be able, as for example, to build bridges that could last for ages, for an eternity. So here you have an example of an industry which can be created from the moon. And where I talk about bringing from the moon a lot of materials from the Earth, yes, it's very complicated to extract ourselves from the Earth because it's a big planet and the gravity is strong, but from the moon you must understand that it will be much easier to bring a lot of materials to the Earth. And it can even fly by itself with the gravity to the moon. So we can find a lot of solutions, but it's not idealistic to talk about mining the moon and to bring what we have mined to the Earth. So we can imagine all the advantages of the industry on the moon, but if we want to go there, it's not only for that. The scientific potential is equally enormous. On Earth, space exploration is of bad quality because of the atmospheric turbulence. So one more time, we take advantage of the absence of atmosphere on the moon. So what's happening on the Earth? Due to these atmospheric turbulences, we don't have good qualities of images of the cosmos. So we have some solutions, but it's complicated. So the best we can do is just to avoid this turbulence. So we have launched satellites to space to observe the universe. So the satellite Hubble enables us to get all the nice images of cosmos that you have even seen yesterday. It's thanks to this telescope. But it's a little telescope, Hubble. Why? We are not able to carry that big mirrors in a rocket. It's too bulky. And when you launch a rocket, you have a lot of mechanical constraints on the mirrors. And if you want a good mirror, it needs to have a perfect shape. So it's also a problem to bring a mirror of good quality in space due to the launch, due to the takeoff of the rocket. So it degrades the optical qualities of the mirror, and it's very complicated to repair it in space. We have done it once with Hubble, but it's hard to go to reach a satellite in space. So one more time, we have an enormous advantage to build a telescope on the moon, and even on the dark side on the moon. So you may know it, but the Earth is rotating on itself, but the moon is always facing the same way. So we could build a telescope on the dark side of the moon, the side we never see when you look at the moon. And we would have much better observations. We could build much larger telescopes than what we have in orbit. And we could build the optical components on the moon as well. There are a lot of silicates to build the mirror. And as I told you, there is no atmosphere, so we can even build much more. The optics would be of much better quality as well. And again, another advantage of an observatory on the moon, the gravity is not as strong as on the Earth, so we could imagine much bigger mirrors than what we have on the Earth, because the mirrors, they are heavy, and due to their own mass, they lose their shape. And I told you we need a perfect shape for the mirror to get good focus and to get good images. So you can even build bigger telescopes just thanks to the gravity. We don't have atmosphere. We have advantages to build this optics on the moon because there is no atmosphere. It will be a revolution in astronomy and in observation. And thanks to this astronomy, where we could respond to fundamental questions, such as the detection of other planets of the size of the Earth. So we also need interferometry for that, because if you just look at a planet far in another system, you will just get the light from the star close to this planet. So with interferometry, we can cancel the light from the stars and only see the planet. Well, we can, I can talk about that later, after the conference. It's because the light is a wave, so that's why there are some tricks to observe a planet and not the star. Well, and so we could see those planets. We could see the light, the direct light coming from those planets, and thanks to this light, we can guess the components of the atmosphere of the planet. And if we know the components of the atmosphere, we can tell if there is a life or not on this planet. Today, we can't tell that. And we could answer also a very simple question. Is the planet, the Earth, the size of our planet and the distance from our star, so good conditions for life, is it something common, is a galaxy or not? Maybe there are many, many planets like the Earth, billions of them. So we would like to answer those questions, to get optimism. So there are some examples of what we can do on the moon, but we have to imagine a lot of things, just a few examples. So we have a big a particle accelerator in Switzerland. It's called the CERN. So you have a huge tunnel of, I guess, 27 kilometers, the perimeter. Well, and you need a void, again, in this accelerator. And this, we could build such kind of accelerator on the moon because we have this void. We can, there is a very important argument, but it's more in the future, that we have a lot of helium-3 on the moon, and this is an excellent component for fusion. So on the Earth, we could do fusion with deuterium and tritium, but it's not as good as if we use some helium-3. Because with the helium-3, you get protons as a result of the fusion. And those protons have a charge, and with the charge, you can control the energy. If you just use deuterium and tritium, you will get heat. And the heat, you don't get as much energy to convert the heat in electricity. If you have proton, it's much easier to get the energy from the result of fusion. So I like to talk about some technical details to make you understand it's not science fiction. It's something that we have a very clear idea of what we would get from those technologies and what is the improvement. And I could speak about another phenomenon on the Earth. During nighttime, it's very cold, and when you have a very strong cold, all the metals became supraconductive. It means that the electrons are not stopped by the metal. Usually, it collides the other atoms of the metal, the electrons, and then you get some heat, and you have lost energy. So when you have a very strong cold, you don't lose any energy in the conductivity of electricity through a metal. So this is another advantage that we could use on the moon. And last but not the least, we can also envisage a medical revolution as a result of experiment we can conduct on the moon. So on this, I refer to the work of the basement, which demonstrates the influence of the electromagnetic environment on living processes. and more precisely on the communications of living cells among them. On the moon, we would have another environment without the electromagnetic field of the Earth. So we could experiment on the living processes. And I believe this is a solution to cure the cancer, because the cancer, it's a problem of communication between cells. And all what we do today is to burn the cells. Oh, they don't respond to the body. Let's burn them with chemistry. But it would be such an improvement if we could simply rally them back to reason, those cancer cells. So I believe that it would be as well a medical revolution to experiment on the moon. So I hope that now you are able to see humanity's potential to inhabit the moon. And I guess this is only a small part of what we could do. We don't lack that much to start right now this kind of project. So what I tell you now, it's not in 5 years or 10 years. If you tell me that, okay, you have convinced me, let's go to the moon, we start the project right now. So what do we need to do? So first of all, we need a rocket capable of delivering a very heavy cargo to the moon. We have already done it. The rocket Saturn V of the Apollo program was a heavy launcher already. And then, if we could launch many tons of cargo to the moon, we could already build a base that where the astronauts would live. So at this day, there is no operational heavy launcher in the world. Before, we had the Russian Energia and the Saturn rocket of the Apollo program. These rockets were able to deliver up to 100 tons to the low Earth orbit. In comparison, the Ariane rocket, so the European rocket, today can only deliver 20 tons to low Earth orbit. And because of the lack of such projects, we have lost the technologies. We have already we don't have EV launcher. And we are losing the skills of engineer. Maybe this is the worst of all, when we have forgotten what we were able to do more than 40 years ago when we set foot on the moon. So the Americans today, they have abandoned the space shuttle program, so they are even not able to send a man in space. So I want you to consider how the terrible politics we had so far have destroyed a lot of potential for space exploration. And this wasn't a far future. Today we could have a base on the moon already. It was they planned to do it for the 90s, von Braun and Kraft-Ericke. So having this vision of a lunar base, we need to develop new launches. The Russian had called on us, Europeans, to work with them on the Kuiper project for a reusable shuttle. So, of course, having no vision of future, the European refused. We also need to develop a shuttle used exclusively for traveling between low Earth orbit and low Moon orbit. So now I talk you a bit of the architecture of a space mission. We like to separate every rocket for every specific goal. So we have a heavy launcher to go to the low Earth orbit. Then we have another rocket to go between, a shuttle will stay in space between the low Earth orbit and the low lunar orbit. This shuttle would dock on a space station. We have already one in low Earth orbit. So we would need maybe another space station on lunar or low lunar orbit. And we need a lander for landing on non-flat areas at the poles of the moon. The Apollo program landed on a very flat area. But now there is a very big advantage for space exploration. We know that there is water on the moon, ice. Water at the poles, because at the South Pole you have in craterias, you have some piece of land which never exposed to the light of the sun. Then you have water then, and we need to settle a base there to use this water for astronauts. So we need to land on non-flat areas, and this we have never done it so far. So we need some technologies that we have not developed yet to land on such kind of surfaces. So all those who promote space exploration know what policy must be applied. We know what to do to build a base on the moon. There are projects. The Russian proposes a project. But the European says, wow, well, it's too expensive. So for the first time of this speech, I will speak like a pragmatist. Space exploration is a source of a lot of income, more than any other investment. So if people say, oh, it will cost a lot of money, I want to answer them, no, you will earn a lot of money from this exploration, from those projects. So I will tell you some estimations which were done for the Apollo program. So with the Apollo space program, it is estimated that for each dollar invested, the USA's gross national product rose $2.50, the personal income by $2, and consumer outlays $1.50. All three increases led to a federal tax return on half a dollar on every space dollar invested. You can't imagine a better business. So I don't like that much to those kind of arguments that we earn money from space explorations, but actually we do. So, well, you must understand how we earn this money. We develop a lot of technologies to go to the moon. A lot of technologies in computer science, electronics, materials, and all those new technologies resulted in massive spin-offs for the civil industry. So it helps the American industry to stay the most competitive for at least 50 years. So you get a real, you have a real gain for starting space exploration. And without the exploration of space as a catalyst, as a long-term objective, we never would have imagined all the solutions which today feed our progress, our economy, and our well-being. I will give you an example of that later. That is a real economy, a will, a vision of the future. And it is only afterwards, without really looking for it, that purely material benefits will occur. You don't have to look for money. If you have a vision for the future, you will develop new projects, and the money will come by itself. And you will never realize all of what you could realize with a vision if you have only short-term perspective. So that's why I believe that even in economics, you get more with long-term objectives than with short-term ones. Some years ago, I met several German students at the European Space Agency. They came for the most part from the University of Stuttgart. And I think that the training, the space engineering training they have there is one of the best in Europe. I had some news recently from them. And they have developed a system to be able to refuel rockets in space. So this is extremely important, what they have done, those German students. Because when you will reach the low Earth orbit, we burn a lot of propellant. And then we lack propellant to go further to the moon and to carry cargo with you. And you could tell me, well, why not just put more propellant in your rocket to have enough to do all the trip? Yes, but there is a problem if you do that. That your rocket is heavier, and then you will burn propellant to carry propellant. And it's absolutely not efficient. It's better to have not that big tanks and to refuel them in space. And it's complicated to refuel a tank in space, not like your car. You are in space. You're not able to push a fluid in your tank that easily. So that's why it needs a lot of creativity to find solutions. We were able to do that, and students did it actually. And they don't ask for billions. It's not that expensive to find the solutions. I know them. They're happy with what they got from their PhD. So, and thanks to this refueling in space, the heavy launcher, which are able to carry 100 tons to the low Earth orbit, you refuel them and you are able to carry this 100 tons to the moon. If you don't refuel in low Earth orbit, you only bring some tons of cargo. You just burn all your rockets just full of propellant and just burn all of this. And you don't bring robots, materials for the astronauts on the moon. So, yes, this example of the students working on the space project is a perfect example of how you can be impassionate by space exploration and how you find a real meaning in your life and you find a real happiness working on this kind of project. And I'm very happy that in Europe we are still able to bring this kind of hopes to the students and to everybody working in the field. So as Kraft Heirike says it so well, the idea of traveling to other celestial bodies reflects to the highest degree the independence and agility of the human mind. It lends ultimate dignity to man's technical and scientific endeavors. Above all, it touches on the philosophy of his very existence. So, I think that these students felt what do the words of Kraft Heirike mean. So, as Kraft Heirike and von Braun in their time, they had ideas for space exploration for the next 40 years. We have as well a lot of ideas ourselves for the next 40 years if you tell us to start right now. So the moon is an excellent platform for the pursuit of space endeavors. Once we have this base, what can we imagine to go further? So of course, the next objective is Mars. You hear a lot about Mars in the media, I guess, but I would advise them to speak more about the moon. It is the first step, and then only we can think about Mars. After having been on the moon, we have a lot of experience of living on other celestial bodies to survive there. So it's very important not to go directly to Mars, to set a foot there and to come back, as we did with the moon. We won't gain as much. So, and from the moon, I mustn't forget that, we can produce a lot of proper gold. We have, from the resources on the moon, we can We can produce this propellant, and we gain a lot launching our rockets from the moon, because the gravity is not that strong, so it's less energy to extract ourselves to the moon. It's very expensive, in fact, to extract from the Earth. So, to reach an objective like Mars, we need higher orders of technological breakthroughs. We can't only use the chemical propulsion. Because, yes, we can use this propellant on the moon to start to go to asteroids or any object, not that far, but still there is a problem to go to Mars. It will be very long. And you don't want to spend 1 year or two to go to Mars and to come back. So we need a higher technology. That will be the real next step for space exploration. So we need to develop the ionic propulsion. I want to explain you what it is. So in space, when you want to create a movement, when you want to produce an upward thrust, you don't have anything to push. You don't have, how can you produce a thrust when you walk, you have a ground. In space, the only way to produce a thrust is to eject materials. So what we do today is we have a propellant, we burn it, and it's ejected quickly from the rocket, and you produce a thrust in the opposite direction of the ejection of mass. So, it's the laws of physics. The faster the ejection of gas is, the bigger the thrust will be. So today we don't have such a fast ejection of gas with just chemistry. With ionic propulsion, we get a higher order of magnitude of the speed of the particles we eject. So what we want to do, so we have a gas in our rocket, in our tanks. We want to ionize a part of this gas. Thanks to the ionization, there is an electrical charge. With the electrical charge, with just an electric field, you can accelerate this charge. And then you want to accelerate it much quicker than what we have with just chemistry. And then we get much stronger thrust. And the propellant, in this case, will be much lighter. So you gain on everything. But of course, to ionize a gas and to accelerate it, you need a lot of energy for that. And that's why we will need some nuclear energy to power this rocket. So fission energy, the same nuclear energy that we are using today, is sufficient to go to Mars, let's say, in 30 days or maybe less. It's the Vasimo project. There are already some experiments for this propulsion. It's not a plan. There are people working with these motors. What is not ready so far, I have heard the problem. You have such a heat in the tanks that, you know, you have some joints to keep your metallic structures, but due to the heat produced in the tanks, those joints are melting. So, you know, the problem it's not a simple problem, but it's something it's not a complicated equation. It's not complicated physics or mathematics. We have just a problem of materials. And if we develop those new materials for this ionic propulsion, you can be sure that these materials will be useful in the industry later. And this will be an example of how space exploration brought to the industry new technologies and money at the end. But this money is not the most important. It's just a logical conclusion of the right vision for future. If you have a good idea of what you want to do, you will get the economy for that. And you will, people will have work, they will have a meaning for their life, they will have art, we have more culture, we gain everything. That's why it's so important, this vision. We have to know what we want to do. And then we can go to see in details how we have gained something. So this example of this new material is just a detail. But in fact, there are a lot of details like that which make our life better thanks to this kind of project. So I shared with you my views about our imperative to explore space. I tried to convince you that we need it in a close future, even right now, in fact. But I can prove you that we have to do it. It's a faith, the same faith which pushes every scientist to investigate, the faith that there are physical laws in nature, the faith that man is able to understand these laws, that we can't understand the nature, and the faith that we have to use these laws for our own benefits. So the science, there are a lot of scientists, they are not conscious of that all what they do stems from a faith, from an intuition. It's the way Planck or Leibniz think about science. You can't demonstrate, you can't prove that you had a correct intuition before you have done a discovery. But all what is pushing you to do this discovery is the faith. And there is no mathematical equation to be sure that what you do is useful. You can only prove that you had to do it when it's done. So, and what pushes you to the research is a faith. And the German philosophy has understood it very quickly. So it's the same with space exploration. I have the faith that we need it. And at some time, we laugh about the fact. Someday we laugh that we believed that we were born to stay on Earth. Do you think that in 300 years that people will think the same way as we do? Many things will have happened. And today we have people thinking that we have just to manage the resources here. But for sure, the future won't be that. I'm optimistic. So I'm sure we will do this space exploration, and this crisis will have an end, because we have to. So yes, it's as stupid to believe the world is finite, but to believe that the Earth is flat. So we have to have new principles for our future, and yesterday we had a lot of talks about that. And we must believe in our ability to create the future we dream of. Space is a natural step for the future of mankind, and the new generation is ready for it. Thank you.